Welcome to Plymouth Beneath the Surface podcast. Take a deep breath and dive with me into Plymouth waters to meet people such as scientists, students, photographers, divers, and artists that have orientated their lives around the ocean. I'm your host, Louisa Sian, a recent marine biology graduate from the University of Plymouth, and I'm really happy to have you here to listen to some of my conversations with inspiring and passionate people talking about the ocean. So let's get started. Welcome for this new episode of the podcast and welcome to Oliver.
Thank you very much for having me.
Can you introduce yourself, please?
My name's Oliver Bearden. I'm a sailor. I'm an environmentalist and I run Sail Britain.
And what is Sail Britain? How can you explain what it is?
Sail Britain is an interdisciplinary sailing project. It's also a community. It's about taking people out onto the ocean to learn about the ocean. The ocean is out of sight and out of mind for most of us. And sailing is a wonderful way of connecting with it. It's a very intimate connection. You have the power of the water in on the boat and the wind. It's not just an incredible thrill, but it brings together the elements in a very special way. And it also produces teamwork on board. You've got to work with people. So there's a huge people element to it.
How does it work? Is it like over summer and you do like week by week? Like, can you explain a bit of like the process of how you take people on board, really?
Yeah, we run a summer program. This year we're running about 14 weeks perhaps, possibly, on the water. And people join the boat for a week. The trips have different themes. Some are environmental focus, learning with an onboard expert, a marine biologist or conservationist, for example. So you don't only just experience the ocean, you actually are able to really learn something about the ocean secrets. Other weeks are more cultural and creative focused. So we run a very vibrant artist residency program, which has been really, really interesting. And that has fed into land-based exhibitions as well, which is a great way of communicating ocean issues. But the whole nature of it being interdisciplinary is really important because the ocean is such a huge, huge topic, and how we engage with the ocean is, you know, we engage with the ocean on so many different levels and have so many different impacts upon it that working with a range of people from a wide variety of different backgrounds, you get a sort of representative thinking body, really. The boat is a bit of a think tank for our approach to the ocean.
Yeah, you were saying how it's like sort of like an accelerator of like bringing people together, a good mix of people exchanging ideas and discussing, and then just like something comes out of it.
Yeah, it's the whole project, the way the project was founded, it just crept up on me from the beginning. Sailing was always a passion of mine, but after a while I found myself getting more and more interested in the social aspect of it. I was making all my friends on boats, and all the stories which, you know, make up your friendship circle began to evolve around the sea and about our adventures on boats. And yeah, the boat seems to be the centerpiece of a coming together of experience and ideas. I think it's a very intimate space. You have to work together as a team to sail it. It's a complex machine, and you have to work, you know, fluidly together and look after each other. It's an unfamiliar environment where you have a sort of heightened awareness of your exposure in nature. You're isolated, you're in this small little cocoon, and it makes you feel small. And I think that really brings people together in their humility to become close. So we find that, you know, people make friends in a week, like it would take months on land. And that kind of intensity really feeds into interesting projects, and there have been so many productive projects come out of that from an environmental and a cultural point of view.
So what does a day look like on board of Merlin?
Well, it usually starts with coffee.
Yeah.
One of my favourite moments of the day is when you've just woken up, is to go up the companionway and pop your head out through the hatch onto the deck, see what's happening with the world today. You can get a sense of what the wind is doing, what the weather might be like outside, but it's a beautiful moment, that one. And then, we get ready. We get the boat ready for sea. The boat has two modes. You've got domestic mode, which is, you know, when she's safely at anchor and she's our cozy, warm living space. And then during the day when she's under sail, she becomes this wild living thing, which takes off at an angle, and anything that's not stowed, you know, is thrown across the cabin.
Do people need to know how to sail before they come on board?
No, that's all part of the fun. I'm actually a sailing instructor, so I'm, you know, quite happy taking total beginners out onto the water. We don't push it too hard at the start. We make sure everyone is within their comfort zones, and, you know, everyone's included. And yeah, that's part of the fun, is learning together and, you know, becoming a team.
So why sailing? What do you think it brings to people?
Why sailing? There are many reasons why sailing. On a very simple level, it's an incredible thrill. As I briefly mentioned, you know, getting the boat going when it's a good wind across the ocean is just one of life's great experiences. The power of the wind and the power of the water. It's also a very sustainable means of transport. You know, we don't burn much fuel at all. It's all wind power. We just burn a little bit going into port, that's all. The important thing about sailing is the sort of the teamwork. That's the really special thing. The magic happens when people get together. Without people, it would be fairly meaningless. I have no interest in sailing on my own, for example. It's seeing what that fairly primal experience brings to us as humans. You know, we go out into the ocean. It's not our realm. You know, the ocean makes us feel very small. You know who's boss out there. And that's a really humbling experience. And it sets the scene for learning more about, you know, our impact on the ocean, which is, yeah, it's surprising when you feel so small. You know, every time we put our microplastics net into the water, for example, we find the effects of human habitation pretty much anywhere we go. So it's a stark contrast.
So yeah, you mentioned the microplastic nets. Is that sort of like an activity that you do on board with people to like see what's in the water, and do you look at other things as well?
Absolutely. Sail Britain is much more than just sailing. It's an active learning experience. We all need to know more about the ocean and about our effects upon it and the creatures which live there. So we carry various bits of scientific gear on board. We've got a microplastics net, which we get in the water on a regular basis. And you put the net down into what appears to be a pristine sea, you know, nothing visible, no rubbish in sight. And you trawl it for 20 minutes, half an hour. And it's carving a slice half a meter wide across the surface of the ocean for, what, a mile maybe? And it's, you know, it's a tiny percentage of the ocean surface. And yet every single time we find evidence, we find microfibers everywhere, particularly. But also the net pulls out much more than just plastic. Plastic is not the biggest issue facing the oceans. It's the most visible, certainly. And it's a good gateway for people to learn about other issues. But we, you know, with a mesh size of 135 microns, we catch pretty much everything. So there's an awful lot of life there as well. Some of it we aim to put back, little jellyfish or small fish. You know, we have a quick look at them in the sample pot, and then we pop them back in the sea. You can't always do that with the plankton, but the plankton are really interesting. Who's seen plankton in real life? You know, we talk about it, and we talk about it being the base of all marine food chains, but it remains this rather abstract thing, and no one really knows what plankton is until we see it here on the saloon table in our sample dish. And we can have a look at that under the microscope, and you see all these little tiny creatures, zooplankton and, you know, phytoplankton as well, plants and animals. And, you know, they are the base of all marine food chains and will be profoundly impacted by climate change. So it's a really good way of inspiring people about the need to, you know, think about climate and the ocean. And that's the big one. But we also carry a hydrophone on board. And this is one of my favourite pieces of equipment. It brings the ocean alive like nothing else, and it's really nice to put it down into the water after dinner when the boat is safely at anchor in some wild place. Because we think of the ocean as a two-dimensional space. It's very empty, it's very vast, there's nothing out there, maybe a few fish. But when you put the microphone into the water, you realize there's a huge three-dimensional soundscape to the ocean. We hear all sorts of things. In wild places, we hear all the shellfish and the clams and the shrimp, and it just makes you realize there's a whole civilization down there of other creatures. But also, it's rare not to hear some anthropogenic noise. And if you put the microphone into the water in a harbor when there are ships around, it's really scary. The contrast to the natural soundscape is horrific. Ships are incredibly noisy underwater. And of course, sound travels much faster and much further underwater. So sometimes we've heard ships, but we can't actually see them on the surface. They're either over the horizon or they're just a small boat, but still making a considerable noise at a great distance. So the hydrophone is brilliant, fantastic science communication tool. And I think people always are a little bit stunned after we've done that. Yeah, if there's one thing I had to keep on the boat, I'd keep the hydrophone.
And when you do the, like, the whole week, do you stay at sea or do you go on land as well? Or is it like a sea-based week?
We stop every night, in whether that's in a harbour or in a wild anchorage. Mostly, I prefer to seek out the wild places. That's the, you know, that's the privileged thing about being able to go onto the ocean, is you can go where other people can't. And, you know, since we can, we may as well. And that's where you see the wildlife. And that's where you really appreciate the wilderness more. But it depends largely on the project. You know, if we're doing a more of a cultural project, we might visit local communities, we might visit fishing people. It depends on the topic of the week. So if there's more of a human focused week, then yeah, we'll visit people on land as we go around the coast.
And where do you go? Because obviously I know you had to move the program to the southwest. What was the original plan and what's the new program like?
Well, the original plan this year was to set sail from East Anglia in April and sail west around the south coast and then up the Irish Sea, coast of Wales, and spend the latter half of the summer in the Western Isles of Scotland, which is an incredibly beautiful sailing area, full of wildlife, full of wilderness, but also full of human issues and incredible cultural stuff. I mean, that goes for all of our coastline in Britain. You know, we're a small island, but it's really diverse, and most people don't know it. You know, we think we have to jump on a long-haul flight to find adventure on the far side of the world, and we really don't. It's here on our doorstep, and it's a beautiful island. An adventure is a state of mind as much as it is a place, of course. So, yeah, we had to move the entire programme to England this year because the Scottish regulations were, well, making things difficult. There was no clarity, there was no sort of future direction. So, yeah, we are really enjoying the southwest, and, you know, just being here for a month so far, we've discovered so many places I never knew existed. But, yeah, it's sensible to keep things simple this year with COVID continuing a second year, which none of us expected, not knowing what a global pandemic is like within our lifetimes. But we're hoping next year things will be better and that we will be able to replicate our original plan for this year next year.
So this summer you'll be based in Plymouth and Falmouth, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And then the boat will go home to Ipswich for the winter, and then we'll set off next spring.
And get ready for next year.
Yeah.
What sort of people come on board? You've got the expedition leader. And what sort of person is that? Is it always a marine expert? Or do you have a wide range of people coming as expedition leaders?
Yeah, we tend to, most of our weeks of in the program have a specific theme. Some are marine conservation based, you know, from an educational point of view. Others are, you know, the culture and creative projects. But almost all of them have an expedition leader in addition to the two sailing crew, myself and the first mate. And this brings much greater diversity to the program. It brings someone who is a real expert in their field, from whom everyone can learn. It's, you know, it's a reference of a body of knowledge on board, which brings ocean topics alive. This week we're sailing with a marine biologist as our expedition leader, and this is a week looking at life in the ocean, you know, and who better than a marine biologist to bring that alive. But with the artist residency program, we often have an artist leader who puts together or helps to put together the creative program. And it also takes pressure off myself and the first mate to look after the sailing issues, the navigation, keeping everything safe, and making sure everyone's happy. So we think that despite it, you know, only being a small boat with a maximum of 9 people on board, having a crew of 3 just results in a much richer program, and that makes Sail Britain stand out as a project, I think, as well.
And in terms of then the other people that come on board, are there people that already have background in marine biology, or is it like anyone can come? You don't need any basic knowledge.
It's open to everybody, and that's a really important point for me. I think everyone needs access to the ocean. We try to keep the program as accessible as possible in terms of cost and in terms of flexibility of participation. We have people from all backgrounds, from all walks of life, and that's really encouraging to see. The demographics are diverse, but in contrast to some sort of sailing projects, we have a very young demographic. We have lots of women, which again, sailing is generally a male-dominated industry. but it's really nice to see that level of participation. And it depends a little bit on which project we're running. So people with an interest in marine biology, for example, would tend to gravitate towards the more conservation focused parts of the program. Artists would, you know, tend to go for the residencies, but occasionally we get a switch over. And I really like it when artists and scientists work together. You know, we bridge that gap with the marine social sciences, which are going to be incredibly important. But with, you know, so with so many diverse issues of facing the oceans, it's really important to have a diverse group of people learning about it and experiencing it and becoming ambassadors for the ocean.
And do you find people sort of like come with this idea of what the ocean is and they leave Merlin with like a completely, maybe not completely different, but maybe deeper understanding of what the ocean is and maybe the threats that it's facing? Do you see a shift into like people's minds or opinions?
Absolutely, we do, yeah. I think, and this is a great joy to me because it means that, you know, the mission I've set out, you know, to engage people about the importance of the ocean and the beauty of the ocean is working. We often start with, you know, our introductions around the saloon table at the start of the week and consider what, you know, what our aspirations are, what we want to learn, what we want to share. And we do the same at the end of the week. What have we learned? What have we shared? How have our perceptions changed? And it's a huge joy to me personally to see that people have, you know, really had an unusual experience and have gained a greater appreciation for the deep blue out there as well as the coastal area. And that's, yeah, that's really satisfying.
But would you say that people that come on board are already sort of aware and are already, you know, conscious about what's going on and they already have this interest in the ocean?
I think generally that has to be true, yes. And this is the challenge we face, you know. We need to break out of this bubble.
That was going to be one of my questions. Yeah. How do you break that bubble and bring people on board that?
Yeah, it's hard.
I mean, we've talked about it quite a lot together already.
It's really hard. But I think everyone learns something new. And I'm a great believer in the ripple effect. You know, if you plant a seed in the right place, or if you plant many seeds, you can grow a forest. And that message, you know, will spread further. With that will come a greater curiosity and maybe more people will get involved. We are thinking about projects as well for the future program, which would specifically target people who are not interested in the ocean, perhaps, or certainly should be, but don't. Community leaders, business people, politicians, maybe.
Policy makers.
Policy is going to be huge.
Yeah.
As is finance, you know. The ocean is increasingly being regarded as an economic realm. And we've got massive issues with things like deep sea mining, overfishing. You know, these are really pushing the ocean to the limits. And in the case of deep sea mining, we know very little about its effects on the deep ocean because we know nothing about the deep ocean, relatively speaking. And, you know, policy is desperately needed to make sure we do know that before we go and destroy the place. There's a social science and a political and economic element to it as well. And we hope to achieve more of that in the future.
Let's put everyone on Merlin and get them sailing around Plymouth and Falmouth.
I think they discover a lot.
And, because you've got to experience it, don't you? Understand why it is important to protect. If you just know facts and figures, but you haven't experienced it, it haven't come from within, then how you can't...
Seeing is believing, isn't it? And that's, you know, that's exactly what we're finding in the case of the plankton, for example. I'd never seen plankton before we had our microplastics there. And it's just completely brought alive the three-dimensional nature of the sea and the fragility of it. Seeing is believing.
And do you see, I'd say, bigger organisms than plankton? Do you have any encounters with dolphins and whales and fish?
We do, and that's always a constant privilege. You know, it's rare that a week goes by on the South Coast when you don't have an encounter with dolphins. It's rare not to have some kind of encounter in Scotland every day.
Wow.
And they are, yeah, some of the most special moments because these, you know, these top predators in the ocean are incredibly intelligent. They live in a different world to us, but you can really feel their intelligence and their playfulness. Dolphins particularly will really come and actively play with the boat, and they, I think they like the pressure waves which it generates, and they You can see them turning in the water to look up at you. On very calm days, you can actually hear their squeaks and clicks from above the water, which I didn't expect. And whales, you know, a whale is always a completely awe-inspiring experience. We've had some incredible whale sightings and have witnessed, you know, whale behaviour because the sailing boat is silent, more or less. You know, whales rely upon sound and whatever to communicate, and over long distances that can be drowned out by ships. But we saw a northern bottlenose whale, you know, up in Scotland doing its tail slapping routine in a glassy sea at sunset, and that was just, could you ask for anything more perfect?
Wow.
It makes you feel very humble.
And how is it to spend quite a long time, although a week isn't that long, but let's say relatively long time with people in such an enclosed space? How do you see the dynamic change? Or like, how's the experience?
Yeah, the experience is an interesting one. I think most people are really aware that we're in a confined space. And it's often, you know, an anxiety people have beforehand. You know, how much space is there? How big are the cabins and the bunks and whatever? And the truth is, you know, a boat of whatever size is a small space for a group. But because of that, you know, you have a heightened awareness of the need that you need to be accommodating, and you need to be a team player with your fellow crewmates. And to, you know, when you've got that sort of in your mind, then you can relax and really enjoy each other's company. So we've not really had any issue. Everyone seems to get into the swing of things very naturally and have a great deal of respect for each other. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's really, Sail Britain is really a people project.
Yeah, is that one of your favourite thing about Sail Britain is having people and discussions that come out of groups?
Yeah, indeed. I'm a people person. I wouldn't be able to do this week after week if I weren't. You know, on the grand scheme of things, I'm pretty easygoing and happy and interested in people. But it's hard work. It's hard work, certainly.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly rewarding, and that's why I continue.
What would you like to see happening for Sail Britain?
That's an interesting question. It changes of its own accord. Every year is different. To a certain extent, I'm happy with that. But we also, you know, I do have aspirations for it. I think, as with all small projects, it starts small. And I'm personally the driver for most things at the moment. You know, we're getting more people involved. It's becoming more diverse. It's becoming more about community. That's a really positive thing. And I would like to have more focused projects as well. People don't necessarily know each other when they sign up or join a week here and there. It's, you know, they meet for the first time on the boat. But some of the most amazing projects we've done have been very focused with a team in advance. The Anthropocene project with the Marine Social Science team was amazing, and the effort which they all put into that before the trip allowed us to get a bit further when we had that limited time out on the water. And I think that's, you know, can be really particularly true of projects which may involve policy or governance or
company
research.
Yeah.
But it's also really important that people just have a wonderful time, you know. There's a lot of joyfulness in a very sort of basic human sense. And it's important that people come back with a good experience of the ocean and that they love it and value it for the future, and therefore are more likely to think about it as part of our world.
So you mentioned the Anthropocene project. Can you tell us a bit more about what it was?
Yes, the Anthropocene project was run by a dear friend of mine who is an incredibly passionate ocean advocate. She's very talented and is very interested in the ocean, very interested in people, and she's a marine social science pioneer, really. Marine social science is a very new topic. Been there all along, but in the last 5 or 10 years, there's some people who are really driving the importance of understanding the human relationship to the ocean alongside the environmental science perspective. I think that the two are most important, or they can achieve the greatest effect when they work together. Understanding the context allows us to place the environmental science in the most, you know, important places to achieve our goals. And, you know, there are communities which are very sidelined when it comes to policy, which are reliant upon the ocean. In global policy, you know, we talk about overfishing and how dreadful that is on a global scale. But, you know, it is also part of culture for many societies. And it's not overfishing from their point of view that's the problem. It's the globalization and the mechanization of things, which completely obliterate the more local, sustainable approaches to that, which are really important culturally. And, you know, much of the world relies upon fish as its primary source of protein.
So back to the Anthropocene.
So it was about understanding, as the name suggests, the human relationship to the sea. The importance of that from fishing to finance to communities. It was very much a pioneering project for the expedition leader, and I'm sure it will continue over the next few years alongside the United Nations Ocean Decade. That's the aim anyway, and I look forward to finding out where it goes.
They're based in Oxford, aren't they?
They are, yes.
Yeah.
But that's only where it started.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an Oxford project, really.
It's
the start of something much wider, much broader. That's cool. Where the first seed was planted. Let's see where the next one is.
Yeah, definitely something to look at. Do you have any bases left for this summer, or is it fully booked?
This summer's been very turbulent in terms of how it all works with people signing up. The extended restrictions due to COVID has been a bit of an issue. We had to move the project 500 miles from Scotland, which was a bit of an issue. So we have a couple of spaces at the moment, but things are changing so quickly that if people want to come along, they should probably just drop us an email and see what the situation is on the water.
Yeah.
It's been really nice how the community who are signed up to sail with us this summer have been flexible and accommodating and have been, you know, have borne with us through a very difficult time. It gives you great enthusiasm for humanity when that all happens. Because it has been really hard. We're keeping things as safe as we can, with small groups and careful planning, and everyone pulling together. It's running very smoothly.
Cool. So people can find you on Instagram as well?
Yeah, I mean, the website, sailbritain.org. We have Instagram as well, Facebook, Twitter, but Instagram is great for when we're going along because it's a very aesthetic thing. There's loads of beautiful images coming out of it.
But email is easier.
Yes, you can drop us an email, info@sailbritain.org, and then we'll get back to you as soon as we can, considering we're out on the ocean.
Yeah, amazing. I think we've touched on almost everything. We could obviously talk for a long time, but about celebrating, I
think. Plenty of time for that on the boat.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Oliver, for some time with me and like telling us about celebrating. It's such a great initiative, such a great project. I really wish everyone could spend some time on learning.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Oliver and I, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Oliver is such a legend, and his whole project of Sailbritain, I think, is just incredible. And I really wish everyone could experience that time at sea and, yeah, just experience the ocean hands-on, really. So I've put more details in the description, and don't hesitate to check out the website and the Instagram of Sailbritain, and maybe go on board with them and meet Oliver and Merlin. She's a beautiful, beautiful boat. And thanks again for listening and for being part of this journey, and keep your eyes open for the next episode.